It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm John Clare. The Silent Generation. People born in the mid-1920s to the early 1940s. Time magazine coined the term in a November 1951 article entitled The Younger Generation, and the name has remained ever since. The group was comparatively small because of the financial insecurity of the 1930s and the war in the early 1940s, resulting in people having fewer children. We'll hear from a not-so-silent group born in 1938, composers Joan Tower, William Bolcom, John Corleano, Charles Wernon, and John Harbison on today's What's New. William Bolcom was the longtime professor of composition at the University of Michigan. His compositions have been awarded Grammys, and he often accompanies his wife, Joan Morris, in song. We'll hear one of William Bolcom's most famous compositions, The Graceful Ghost Rag, with pianist Michael Lewin on What's New. The Graceful Ghost Rag by William Bolcom, one of our composers born in 1938. Find out more about What's New at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. I'm your host, John Clare. I spoke with our next composer, Joan Tower, about different moods and voices that can come out in music.
Music is curiously pure on a certain level. So whatever connections you make, you've got to make them very clearly. Made in America was an interesting example of that problem for me. When they asked me to write this piece, the project was called Made in America. And I started thinking about the America side. And I grew up in South America, where there was a lot of poverty in Bolivia, where I grew up, and no class mobility whatsoever. And I started thinking about how lucky and proud I was at that time to have been an American, because I had all these things that they didn't have, and it was because of the country I came from. So that all started to enter my thinking. And then America the Beautiful started to come up in my brain. So the piece is basically built on America the Beautiful. Everything in the piece comes from America the Beautiful. Sometimes it's very obvious that that tune is there, and sometimes it's not there, not recognizably there. So the piece is fabric of going in and out of this familiar, sacrilegious ground. So I started thinking, oh my God, people are going to be up in arms about how I've destroyed this tune or whatever. But you know what? That never happened. That has not happened at all. In fact, I've been on a lot of talkback sessions and stuff with these performances. Not one, and, you know, conducting the orchestra and everything, not one person has talked about politics to me.
Composer Joan Tower, one of the composers born in 1938. Let's hear her Island Prelude with oboist Peter Bowman, the St. Louis Symphony, and Leonard Slatkin on What's New. Leonard Slatkin conducted the St. Louis Symphony with oboist Peter Bowman in Joan Tower's Island Prelude. There's more about What's New, including my interview with Joan, on WBAA.org. We're listening to music by composers born in 1938. Another member of this class is Boston-based John Harbison. I spoke to him about composition and about longevity in music.
Music is, you know, happening all the time. You know, it's not necessarily something that you have to sit down and I think it would be hard to say, okay, I'm going to write a symphony that is going to be heard in 200 years.
I don't think you get too much of anywhere thinking about the future of the piece. But I do think you do have to try to make something that possibly people will want to hear again, that creates curiosity or is unusual enough in the moment that some listeners will want to reconsider it. It has to make some initial impression, too. We certainly don't believe even the most difficult music, which always remains pretty difficult, but it makes some initial impression or we wouldn't continue to pursue it. I think that's the hard part. The idea of very good music often being neglected, even when a piece fails initially, there are always a few people who pursue it for some reason or another. I don't think that the music that most of us are most interested in the concert world was written primarily to wait for listeners way down the road. I think some music had met that fate, but I think that was probably very frustrating to the composers. Mahler's symphonies didn't arrive until the 1960s in terms of the public. But that certainly was not his idea, and certainly far from his hope. So the reception of a piece, I think, has to do very much with the possible consonance or dissonance with the times in which it's introduced, and less with the thing itself. And we have good music that's very easy to get right off, and good music that's not. I was thinking about that today in terms of the Copland Third Symphony, where Copland actually adopted quite consciously an attitude towards comprehensibility at one point where he felt this was needed. That's only part of the attitude, and more important is probably his interest in his material and his respect for his own material, which I think is probably why the pieces have survived.
It's an amazing piece throughout, you know, and it has fanfare in it in the end, but the third movement actually gets a little ethereal.
Copland
really
Third,
thoughtful, you know?
Copland Third was a piece that was written to be a big, impressive piece, which is sometimes a dangerous ambition. But I think that's what's impressive is that he pulls it off. He writes a big, impressive piece.
Yeah,
it's not always true that. In fact, Copland at one point in his own thinking about music said that we would be better off if we wrote more natural, less impressive pieces for a while. I know what he means in the historical moment that he's operating very, very much what he means. I think the only composer I can think of who consistently thought about posterity and grandeur and being overwhelming was Wagner. Allotment of talent was a lot less than any 25 classmates of his, but his willpower was about 25 times stronger than theirs.
Composer John Harbison. Here's the ProArti String Quartet playing Harbison's String Quartet No. 5, written for the 100th anniversary of the ProArti Quartet on What's New. the Proarty String Quartet, playing one of their centennial commissions, John Harbison's String Quartet No. 5. Find out more about what's new at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. I'm your host, John Clare. We're sampling music from the Silent Generation, specifically composers born in 1938. This is the last movement of Frederick Zepsky's Hard Cuts, called Like Bees. Ralph Van Ratt is joined by the ensemble Luna Park, conducted by Arnold Marinissen, on What's New. Like Bees, from Hard Cuts by Frederick Zepsky. Pianist Ralph Van Ratt was featured with the ensemble Luna Park and conductor Arnold Marinissen. Check out our playlists and podcasts at What's New online at WBAA.org. It's What's New from WBAA Classical. I'm John Clare. We're featuring composers born in 1938 on today's show. You can hear this episode and our interviews online at WBAA.org. From a Bridge Records release, let's hear Paul Shihara's Redwood for viola and percussion. Paul Coletti is joined by Jack Van Giem on What's New. Released in January 2013, a recording of Paul Shihara's Redwood with violist Paul Coletti and percussionist Jack Van Giem on What's New. There's more about this show online at WBAA.org. We're featuring music written by composers of the so-called Silent Generation, and there are lots of world-class composers born in 1938. One of them is John Corleano, and I spoke with him about his Symphony No. 1.
This was a piece that was written for the Chicago Symphony, because I was composer in residence there. And I had originally, George Schulte and I talked about my writing a concerto for orchestra, because he had done my clarinet concerto and he thought I wrote virtuosically for the orchestra. But in Chicago, living in Chicago, was my closest friend, a pianist and composer named Sheldon Shkolnick. And just about when I was going to begin writing this piece, he was diagnosed with AIDS. And this was in the 1980s, and that was a death sentence. It isn't now, but it was. And so we knew that within a couple of years, at the most, he would be gone, and probably sooner. And I have lost a lot of friends to AIDS and musical colleagues, and stopped counting after I reached 100. So it hit me that I was writing a rather trivial piece to write a concerto for orchestra, because I'm living in a world in which my friends are dying, my colleagues are dying, and I'm writing a virtuoso piece for a symphony orchestra. So I went to the management and said, no, I really have to write a piece about the friends who I've lost and one I'm losing. And the symphony is a symphony that is completely built on memory and remembrance and various pieces I've even wrote for friends that have come back because these friends have died. It was a very different kind of piece, and very traumatic to write, especially because I was talking to my friend Sheldon. I was writing it mostly in New York, where I live, and he was having AZT and feeling rather wonderful at certain points and avoiding the issue. And I would joke with him because that's what he wanted. And then I'd hang up the phone and go back to composing his memorial piece. It's dedicated to him. I think it's interesting that the piece has been appreciated both in communities that had a lot of AIDS, like San Francisco, and in areas where there was no AIDS. For example, it was played in Kiev, in the Ukraine, many years ago, shortly after it was written. So they heard the piece only on Symphony No. 1 and heard it as a tragic symphony. And they responded in a very similar manner to the audience in San Francisco that had so many people that their friends who have died of AIDS, and it became a very personal piece in San Francisco, but a tragic piece in another country. And so I found that wonderful, because I don't think that any piece should be so limited that it only speaks about one idea. This is about loss, and this is about coming to terms with loss. It's about the kind of rage that you have because you can't do anything about this horrible thing. And it's about the remembrances that you had and have because these friends mean so much to you. And that's a human thing. That's not an AIDS thing. It's just the way we live and we suffer with losing people we love, whether it's parents or lovers or whatever.
This is John Corigliano's Symphony No. 1, played by the National Orchestral Institute and conductor David Allen Miller on What's New. The debut recording of the National Orchestral Institute with conductor David Allen Miller on Naxos. We heard John Corigliano's Symphony No. 1 on What's New. Find out more about this show at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. I'm your host, John Clare. We'll end today with composer Charles Warnin and a concerto he wrote for his friend and cellist Fred Sherry. The finale, 5, of the concerto for amplified cello called 5, is played by the Orchestra of St. Luke's under the direction of the composer on What's New. Five, the finale of the Concerto for Amplified Cello, called 5, by Charles Warnin. Fred Sherry was the soloist with the Orchestra of St. Luke's, led by the composer on the podium. What's New is a production of WBAA Classical, a listener-supported broadcast service of Purdue University. Production assistance from Erica Yawn and Kevin Howard. Content director and executive producers Greg Kostraba. I'm your host and producer, John Clare. Thanks for listening to What's New.